Welcome to Continued Connections, a free service available to participants in Captain Tom's programs at fearofflying.com. This podcast is titled The Abstract Point of No Return.
I want to introduce a concept which is rather advanced. It's not for everybody. After you've heard it, I think you'll know if it's for you or if it's not. The first thing to tell you is that this concept can deal with anticipatory anxiety, but there's a paradox. You can't use it for dealing with anticipatory anxiety. What I mean is this: if your goal is focused on finding an easy way to get rid of unwanted feelings, this is not going to accomplish that. This is for someone who's focused on personal growth, someone who's truly being an adult and dealing with issues on an adult basis, which means a person who's not just looking to feel better, but a person who is looking to be a more complete person. So when I say you can't use this to deal with anticipatory anxiety, I mean just that. This concept, if you embrace it, will deal with anticipatory anxiety, but only as a byproduct of personal growth. So let's get started and see if this is for you or not. The first concept I want to direct you to is the idea that the mind is not necessarily supposed to be at peace. One of the most eye-opening psychological papers I've ever read was by the famous New York psychoanalyst Charles Brenner, MD, who pointed out that psychotherapy does not cure conflict. Why? Because we're supposed to have conflict. What psychotherapy does do is it helps us to provide an area in which a contest between one aim that's in conflict with another aim can come out into the open, and when our conflicting interests and desires and impulses can be made conscious, then we're in a position to determine the best outcome involving those conflicting aims and then take action. By contrast, what happens if those conflicting interests and desires and impulses are not made conscious? Instead of thinking it out and taking the best action, those interests and desires and impulses are expressed in living as first one thing dominating the scene, and then another dominating the scene, and then another dominating the scene. Let's say there's four directions you'd like to go: north, east, south, and west. And they're in conflict, obviously. So if you can think of those different ways you want to go and decide on one course, then you'll get someplace. But if instead of thinking it out in advance and making a commitment to take a certain action in a certain direction, if you simply look at one direction, north, and go that way for a while, and then say, well, I think I want to go east and go that way for a while, and then decide to go west and go that way for a while, and then go south for a while, you'll end up where you started. What we need to do is to allow our aims and desires, interests, and impulses to come into the mind where we can allow ourselves to be fully conscious of them, even if they don't fit together, even if they are in conflict with each other. Now, that may be uncomfortable, but one of the aims of psychotherapy is to help you build the strength to let that happen, to be the arena in which these competing aims, desires, interests, and impulses can be presented to you to deal with them mentally first, instead of simply going through years and years of years going off in northeast, southwest, northeast, southwest, and ending up getting nowhere. Well, I didn't mean to get so deeply into that. What I really wanted to do was to say conflict is something we're supposed to have and supposed to be aware of. I didn't know that years ago. I can look back to when I believed that the proper aim in life was to get rid of or be unaware of conflict. I envied people who just did whatever they felt like doing. And of course, as it turned out in time, their lives became a mess or worse. Now, this idea, which was at one time new for me, may be a new idea for you. The idea that we're supposed to be aware of conflict within ourselves. If that's a new idea, it may take a while to adjust to this new way of thinking. So I'll not ask you to take it any further here, but just to let it sit and let's see what happens over the next few weeks. Let's go to the next point. Anticipatory anxiety is about conflict. That's pretty obvious because when you think about it, you want to fly and you don't want to fly. Perhaps it would be even more accurate to say that some part of you wants to fly because it allows you to do things you otherwise would not be able to do. Let's call that part of you Jonathan, after Jonathan Livingston Seagull. But another part of you says, no way. If I get on that airplane, I'll have a panic attack because I will know that every moment I'm about to die. Well, let's call that part Linus. Linus, who needs the security blanket to be soothed and avoids adventure. When the Jonathan part of us gets the upper hand, the Linus part of us gets terribly upset and causes us a lot of anxiety. And then when the Linus part gets the upper hand, the more adventurous Jonathan Livingston Seagull part of us gets ashamed and frustrated and angry. The Jonathan part of us is happy only when engaged in growth or adventure. The Linus part is only happy clinging and making sure nothing changes. The only thing the two parts can agree on is this: I want to be in control. Each part does. But the problem is, when the Jonathan part is in control, Linus screams bloody murder. And when Linus is in control, the Jonathan part feels ashamed. Well, what can be done? I want to tell you a story. It's a personal story. Back when I was very busy trying to prove something, though if anyone had told me that at the time, I would have told them they were mistaken, I bought a race car. It was a Formula 3 race car built by a company called Lola. I made arrangements for the purchase by phone. The car was in England. I was stationed in the Air Force in Germany at the time. When I went to pick up the car, the seller had slipped off the fiberglass body so I could inspect the car. It only weighed 880 pounds. It was just constructed of triangulated tubing to which four wheels and an engine and transmission were attached. And in the front of the engine was the driver's seat. In the front of the driver's seat, almost nothing. I pictured myself in the car, sitting in that semi-reclined seat with my legs stretched forward, and suddenly realized there was nothing between where my body was going to be and anything that went wrong, except a couple of pieces of lightweight tubing. There was nothing between me and disaster, except skill and luck. I got very uncomfortable, but I'd already paid for the car, so loaded it on a trailer and took it home. Now, the cockpit of this car was so tiny and so form-fitting that sliding into the car, feet first, was like sliding one's fingers into a snug-fitting glove. And once in, it wasn't easy to get out. Let's fast forward to race day. The race will be starting in 5 minutes. It's time to get into the car. I stand on the seat and then start slipping my heels forward, forward, forward until my butt is planted into the form-fitting seat. The seat holds my body firmly, not only in the back but to the sides, so that going around turns I'm completely supported on the sides. And the thought goes through my mind, you shouldn't be doing this. The thought just sits there, you shouldn't be doing this. But there's a fact, and the fact is I'm in the car. And once in, it's very difficult to squirm oneself out. There's no question about it. I'm in the car, and there's another fact. I am doing this. There's no question about that either. Something then happened, which I can only say is remarkable. That something that happened is this. The part of me, the Linus part that says, you shouldn't be doing this, continued to, well, not in words, but in some awareness, say, well, you know, if I keep telling you you shouldn't be doing this when you're going around a curve at 90 miles an hour, my telling you that is going to distract you and both of us are going to get killed. So that part that was in opposition to doing the racing just got out of the car. And this is what's so remarkable. That part got out of the car and I experienced complete peace. Here, just minutes before the race, a feeling of complete peace. Never before in my life had I experienced such a moment without conflict. My life had always been a conflict between what I wanted to do and what I should do. Think again of the two parts of the self, one part that expresses desire and one part that expresses inhibition of desire, one part that wants to do something and one part that says, no, that's prohibited. The two parts were in lifelong conflict. One got out of the car, and I experienced, amazing when you consider the risks of racing and the uncertainty of life and death, success and failure, I experienced absolute peace. Now, how does this apply to flying? Imagine you're in a room with several other people, and in that room, there's a huge sheet of steel suspended from the ceiling on a rope, and there's a sledgehammer. Let's say one person in the room grabs the sledgehammer and slams it against this huge sheet of steel as hard as he can. It would make a horrendous noise. It would bother everyone in the room except one person. Who? The person doing it. Because the person doing it is not the victim of the action, but the cause of the action. There's a huge difference between an action you cause versus an action that happens to you. It's like the Simon and Garfunkel song, I'd rather be a hammer than a nail. Everything in life is like that. When we are the author of what happens, when we cause what happens, it feels very different than if we are the victim of what happens. When the door of the airplane closes, you are past the point of no return. Anxious flyers dread that moment because that's the moment when their control is taken away and it's impossible to use escape to get rid of high anxiety or panic. Think of the door being swung closed as the same thing as the hammer being swung against the sheet of steel. There are two ways to be in these situations. One is the author, one is the victim. When you reach the point of no return on the airplane, which would you rather be, the hammer or the nail, the author who causes you to be there, or the victim who has trapped themselves in the airplane? Now we can talk about this advanced concept, the abstract point of no return. You can be past the point of no return as the author who causes yourself to be in that seat, out of your own choice and out of your own free will, or you can be in that seat being a victim. Here's how. Let's imagine it's 3 days before your flight. What's the very worst that can happen? You could say, well, the airplane takes off, climbs up to cruise altitude, and though I can't imagine how it would happen, I'm sure you could imagine the plane plunging, and you could imagine going through terror with people screaming, with things flying around, and nothing can be done, totally alone, and you plunge and plunge and plunge, and then you're dead. It's not being dead that's so awful. It's getting dead, going through the terror first. As someone posted on the message board, yes, I know flying is 100 times safer than driving, but if I crash my car, it doesn't fall 30,000 feet first. Okay, that's the worst. That's the worst your flight could be. Now, let's look at the other side. What's the best your flight could be? You get on the plane. They upgrade you to first class. You find yourself sitting next to your favorite celebrity who is delighted by your wit and charm. The plane takes off. You hardly notice it. Cruise is perfect, not a ripple, and the plane glides down to touchdown as smooth as silk. You get off and, amazingly, your luggage made it too. Okay, we've been through the worst it could possibly be, and we've been through the best it could possibly be. Neither of those is going to happen. You know that and I know that. Instead, it's going to be somewhere in the middle between those two extremes. It's 3 days before your flight. You have considered the best and the worst. You could hope for a perfect flight. It isn't going to happen. You could dread the worst flight, the flight from hell. It isn't going to happen. What's going to happen? Something between the two. There's only one question remaining. Are you going to do it or not? Here's your opportunity to make the choice to fly. And further, to make that choice a commitment to fly. Here's the kicker. Make the commitment to fly no matter what, even if it kills you. That is the thing that makes all the difference. Making the commitment to fly no matter what, even if it kills you. Making the commitment that it is as certain today, 3 days before your flight, that you will be in your seat on the day that the plane's door closes as if you were there right now and nothing will stop you from being on that plane when the door closes. You've become the author. You can take that to the bank. It's carved in stone, a done deal. Why? Because you say so. Because you have made an irrevocable commitment to do that flight no matter what. An amazing thing happens. That part of you that's been doing numbers on you to find some excuse, some way out of taking the flight, gives up. It decides you're just totally unreasonable. Conflict disappears. You feel unified. You feel peace. Anxiety falls away and vanishes. At least, for as long as that commitment, that unconditional commitment to fly no matter what, even if it kills you, as long as that commitment is there, anxiety can't get a leg to stand on. But it's 3 days before your flight. The commitment probably will lapse. Anxiety will come back. You'll need to make the commitment again. But remember the paradox. You can't do this commitment thing to make anxiety go away. If you try to commit in order to get relief, it won't work. The commitment has to come out of the essence of who you are. Now, this abstract point of no return is not for everybody. This is for people who have a sense of personal power. To keep the commitment real, you'll need to search for hidden strategies you may have to sneak out of the commitment, such as, I'll do it no matter what, but if I don't sleep well the night before, well, it might be different. Or if the weather doesn't look good, or if there's a crash on the news, or if there was something that might be an omen. Look for your secret ways out. Recognize them, recommit. Once again, this is not for everybody. If you're just looking for relief, it's not for you. If you're really committed to personal growth, then the abstract point of no return is for you.